Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Let's introduce you to Tongo and Partners, out to connect program creators with program carriers. Chief Executive Officer James DeJulio joins me next. Have you had enough visions of the future and bleak dystopia everywhere you watch? If so, the new PBS miniseries, A Brief History of the Future, on Wednesday night may be your antidote. We'll hear writer-director Andrew Morgan later this hour. Also ahead, one last round of The Talk, an info oops at Roku, our classic trivia question, and remembering Robert McNeil. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, speaker and tuner radio, presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and 45 other great podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Today's program is brought to you by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, and mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. 58 degrees at the top of the hour. We welcome you on this Friday afternoon to the program about TV's current and future. We're delighted to have you with us. And yes, we will have some thoughts about the wonderful career of Robert McNeil, the former NBC journalist who later changed the face of TV journalism with the McNeil-Lehrer Report, later the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour, with his late partner, Jim Lehrer. In case you didn't know, earlier this morning, McNeil passed away at New York Presbyterian Hospital of natural causes at the age of 93. It was my honor, one of the great honors of my life, to be an intern on the McNeil-Lehrer Report in 1978 while being a student at New York University in Washington, D.C., and I have some thoughts about that experience, including something very special that Robin and Jim made possible during my time there. We'll share that later on in the program. And we want to hear from you about our guest today, about the future of television, and about Robert McNeil and his great career. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, speaker, or tuner radio. And we've got a chat room business as well, so you can put your thoughts in that way. SimonApple04 is the name of the room. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Use the phone or the room. Either way, you are involved with us. And before we get going, for all you Masters fans in the audience, here's the news. As of a half hour ago, Tiger Woods was still one over par with five holes to play, and it looks like he is going to make the cut. Originally, the projected cut line was two over par. It has now been made four over par, so he is three shots ahead of that. So once again, with five holes to play, I believe he's on the 14th or 15th hole right now, Tiger Woods is still one over par, even round so far, along with like Phil Mickelson and others, and it looks like right now, unless things change, he is going to make the cut for, I believe, the 24th or 25th consecutive time in the Masters run. We will find out more, of course. ESPN will be having live coverage of the rest of the round for the rest of today. Anyway, we will have our first guest, James DeJulio from Tongo & Partners, who joins us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. The curtain will come down for good on The Talk, CBS's afternoon hour of conversation this December. Network executives confirmed the decision earlier this afternoon. The program started in October 2010, developed by actress and co-host Sarah Gilbert. She exited the series 5 years ago. The current set of hosts are Cheryl Underwood, Amanda Kloots, Natalie Morales, acted by Malia, and Jerry O'Connell. The Talk earned Daytime Emmy Awards as a program in 2016 and 2018. Once again, CBS is canceling The Talk. The final episodes will run this December. Roku has uncovered a breach of info impacting 576,000 accounts. The smart TV set and device maker discovered the situation while investigating a similar security mishap last month when 15,000 accounts were compromised. Roku officials maintained that in both cases, hackers were able to tap outside sources for login data. Consumers associated with the latest breach have been notified and passwords for those accounts have been reset. And earlier today, Robert McNeil, the co-developer and anchor person of the McNeil-Lehrer Report and NewsHour on PBS, passed away. McNeil was 93 and expired from natural cause at New York Presbyterian Hospital. The McNeil-Lehrer Report, with McNeil in New York and co-anchor Jim Lehrer in Washington, D.C., started in 1975. It became the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour in 1983. McNeil left the program in 1995 and remained a partner in McNeil-Lehrer Productions. I'll have more on McNeil's television journalism after the top of the hour. And that is News Notes for today. And now joining me live from Los Angeles, the Chief Executive Officer of a very interesting company known as Tongo & Partners, James DeJulio. James, thank you for being here.
Simon, thanks for having me.
I have a funny story for you. Just listening to you kick off the show, which is sponsored by BlendJet. There's a fella out there. His name's Ryan Pamplin. He's the co-founder and CEO of BlendJet, and he was a very prolific member of the Tongle creator community when we were first getting the company off the ground, and he had done some of the more successful videos and ads that were made on our platform, even to the point where he produced a Super Bowl commercial for SpeedStick about 10 years ago. So there's a little bit of an interesting blast from the past there as you were kicking off the show.
BlendJet, by the way, is a wonderful product. I know that they're now advertising on shows on ESPN and other places as well. So they've really come a long, long way. Talk about Tongle. Talk about what is the creator community that you work with and what are their ambitions?
Yeah. Well, the company is really built around this idea that everyone is a creator. That my firm belief forever was that human beings, there's enough human creativity out there in the world to do just about anything. And human beings are innately creative beings. And there weren't enough outlets or opportunities for those people to be creative as a living. It always kind of bothered me when I had friends or, you know, acquaintances or whomever who were extraordinarily creative people, and the next thing you know, they're working behind a desk at an accounting – not that there's anything wrong with that, but for them in particular, working behind a desk in an accounting firm. And, you know, I just sort of made it my mission at one point that I wanted to be the person who gave as many people in the world their break as humanly possible, the opportunity to be creative, whether outside of the Hollywood or Madison Avenue system, outside of nepotism and all those things that sort of plagued the industry for a long time. And, you know, it's the who you know kind of a thing. I was really interested in what a meritocracy could look like. And so began to follow this path, which really the point of Tongle is that we create opportunities for talented people, no matter where they are, no matter what they look like, what part of the world they're in, because we know that, you know, the creator and everyone has really been empowered by tools and connectivity and things that when I was starting my career off, I couldn't even have dreamed of. So that's really at the heart of what we do.
And how do you connect these creators, whether they want to do scripted series or unscripted series, with the likes of an NBC, an ABC, a Netflix, a Disney Plus, or even a channel that's running on smart TV sets and devices?
Yeah. So we've built an online community, which I'm also a pretty firm believer that communities organize people can do just about anything. So for, you know, more than a decade now, Tongle has been building a very talented, very passionate community of people in every country in the world. So there's about 160,000 filmmakers, creators, whatever title we really want to give them today in this community. And they are organized on our platform. You've probably seen things like LinkedIn and participated in that, where they're able to create their profile, their persona, link up with their collaborators, find new collaborators, and really start their career off. Now, once they do that, we on the other side, we work with the partners. So we work with large brands. We work with just about every television network, streamers, you know, kind of in that, movie studios, all in that ecosystem. And as they have needs to develop content, that content could be everything from a TikTok video to long-form entertainment, long-form animation, and that sort of thing. And those creative opportunities are either broken down into smaller pieces or one large piece, and those creators effectively get access to them via our website. So if you're a stop motion animator and you're looking for an opportunity to make a short form stop motion series, that's likely on our platform. And the sponsor is offering you know, some form of compensation. It's typically financial compensation, but there are other avenues by which those creators also get incentivized, depending on the type of work that they're doing. And they go through a process by which they creatively bid on different opportunities, and ultimately we've opened up the creative process, and we're making a really smart match between content sponsor and content creator. So that's happening over and over again, hundreds of times on our platform, you know, sort of always. So there's new, if you're a creator, you can come on and follow a certain type of filmmaking discipline or a certain type of, you know, you can follow NBC if you wanted to, you can follow, you know, Nickelodeon or whomever. And you'll start to get into the flow of opportunities, because what we've done is taken creative opportunities that in a lot of cases didn't exist 10, 15 years ago, or ones that can be done in a new way, and in a way open source them, if that makes sense.
Tongan Partners is the subject of our first half hour this Friday afternoon, tomorrow be televised, and the chief executive of that company is James DeJulio. He joins us live from Los Angeles, and you can talk to him right now. Make a call at 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Happy to have you with us this Friday afternoon on the program All About TV's Current and Future. We've got at least two episodes coming your way next week, one on Monday, one on Friday at this very hour, and we may have a special early evening edition for you on Wednesday. Stay tuned for news about that. Coming your way on Monday, Netflix is entering the world of your documentary series with a program called Our Living World. We will have the series producer on Monday, Ben Roy. He will be our lead guest. And on Friday, one of our guests will be the executive producer of Prime Video's revival of a series that originally was on Showtime called American Rust, starring Jeff Daniels and Maura Tierney. The show was canceled, and then it was revived by Prime Video. And that second season, known as Broken Justice, is currently playing. We'll have Nick Nantel. He's one of the executive producers. That's Ben Roy from Our Living World on Netflix, Nick Nantel from American Rust Broken Justice on Prime Video, next Monday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. James, give us one or two success stories of, let's say, series that have made it on a particular network or with the help of an advertiser has made it with them. Tell us, as I said, one or two of those success stories.
Sure. You know, we just had a very cool scenario. We work with, I've usually tell people I've been fortunate enough to have been in business with Lego since I had a business. And we've done what I think is really remarkable and fascinating about a business like Lego, and I think you'll see this, you know, when you start to think about the future of television in general, is this sort of merger of sponsor and content in a way. I mean, you know, obviously one of the biggest movies was a Lego movie a long time ago, which opened the door for the Barbie film, which happened last year, which is a huge hit. But ultimately, you know, this idea that the brand and entertainment could coexist in a way, and Lego's just really redefined what's possible. I mean, I was in a conversation yesterday thinking about, you know, just the nature of television in general, and, you know, up till about, 10, 15 years ago, brands paid for all television one way or another. It just happened to be coming in a different form. So there's a really, really interesting thing happening with Lego where, you know, we've opened up generating or creating new franchises for Lego in this area we call of our site called World Builder. And they have a Netflix show called Dreams. And interestingly enough, they had the desire to make a bottle episode, and the creative community came up with the storyline for the bottle episode, and that's going into production in the new season. So it's a real interesting way to get, you know, ideas from places you would never see ideas from, and really connect the fan base to the entertainment properties that they really love. And we just sort of are doing this over and over again, very quietly, where, you know, if you're a fan of Lego, or, you know, we've done things with large, you know, film franchises from Star Wars to Alien and Twilight and all these entertainment properties that have big fan bases, allowing the people who love them to help build the world or the canon, it has really has really become an interesting and exciting business for us. And I think it does quite a bit to not only create new content and find interesting ideas, it also really helps to market the programming, which, as you know, Simon, you know, there's a lot out there, and it's hard to navigate, and it's hard to connect with the true fans, and building a real fan community, I think, is paramount to every show and every film franchise these days.
When you work with a creator who is trying to line up advertising support from their project, whether the advertiser is big, small, or in the middle, what advice do you give them about how they can make it with that sponsor?
Well, look, no matter what they're doing on our platform, they're being, in a way, hired by that sponsor to begin with. So we look at our community and we say we want to help educate them overall. This is how you make a pitch. This is how you put a reel together. This is how you might build a PowerPoint to respond to requests from a network or a brand or that sort of thing. So we're into like overall education on how to present yourself, how to pitch. And then, of course, we get into overall education when it comes to craft and tools and, you know, new software, new things that need to be on every creator's radar. So we look at it as almost educating a community at large so that they have the tools, because the scale of what we're doing is, you know, it's just not a one-on-one sort of thing anymore. It was when we first started, but now there's so much activity and there's so many people in the community that we need to think about the Tongo community, the creator community around the world as a whole. And so we educate them on how to be successful. So we're like I said earlier, we're really in the business of making as many people successful as we can, because we believe that's better for the community. It's better for individuals. If you have an opportunity to do work that you love from where you are and don't have to change your life and uproot your life and move to a different place and all those things, we think that's a real positive thing for the creative people, but also for the world and that sort of thing, where people, not everyone in the world is just uprooting themselves and moving to LA or New York or whatever. So just, you know, general education goes kind of hand in hand with everything that we do, whether it's tools or it's just like personal, you know, how to win business.
Do you work with the growing number of television festivals that are out there, like Sirius Fest in Denver or ATX in Austin, Texas, or ATV in Atlanta, as well as film festivals like Tribeca here in New York and Dance with Films in Los Angeles and South by Southwest, which of course is also a media technology festival, more and more of which are doing television pilot showings as well as pitch sessions where you can pitch a project. We just had this week Real Abilities, which is run in part by Respectability. It's an organization that works with disabled producers, disabled talent in front behind the camera, and they had a pitch session which included a television pitch. Do you do a lot of work with these festivals to make them aware of projects from creators you deal with?
Yeah, we do. We do quite a bit with South by Southwest. We work with the Sundance Institute over the years, and you know other film festivals as they sort of come up, because you know we're in a lot of ways in the same business, right? We're looking for the next great artist. We're looking to find stories that are outside the system. So you know, occasionally we have participated in pitch fests and things like that, or we've provided screening outlets for, you know, a few years ago we worked with a partner and the Sundance Institute and had a screening of a series of short films that were made by our community. So providing the exposure and the community that these people need beyond what we give them, you know, virtually. So that, you know, we are as virtual as we may seem, we do think the physical interaction is really important for everyone. That experience you can't get anywhere. So yes, festivals are really important to us. Film schools are really important to us. But you know, online communities as well. You know, we tend to draft members into our system from other online filmmaking communities, other online fan communities. In a lot of cases, you know, and I will say what's interesting about what we do is we really draw the fan creator into it, because the way our system is built, if we're doing a project with, you know, professional wrestling or SpongeBob, the internet has a way of finding the really creative people who are really interested in that entertainment property or that show, and bringing them into the creative process. And look, we have people who have made literally millions of dollars doing this over the years. So you know, what's interesting is that I thought everyone, when I first started the company, I thought everyone was going to come into the system and just want to, you know, move on, because like do this for a while, and move on to a break, or then stop. What surprised me is that there's a lot of people who are doing this for their living. There are a lot of people who, you know, we're a main driver of the money that they're earning over the course of a year doing this type of creative work, and they've built small businesses around it. And that for me as a CEO and a founder on a mission in a way is really rewarding, because, you know, that's what we set out to do. We set out to find a way for someone to, you know, and like the creator is one of the big small businesses of the future, small agency creator, small production company. We're just seeing that firsthand because people, you know, people show up and they don't know if they're ever going to do anything. And the next thing you know, they're starting to earn real money, and they have to figure out what it's like to be a business, and they have to figure out what it's like to hire people. So that's all, that sort of development is all interwoven in everything that we do.
James DeJulio, the Chief Executive Officer of Tangle and Partners, is our guest this half hour from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're along with us for the ride on this Friday afternoon. Sam Navin with you as well from Nueva York, where it is 58 degrees at the top of the hour. And for questions or comments, many minutes with James, make a call, 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up our next half hour, we'll be joined by Andrew Morgan, the writer-director of the new PBS miniseries, A Brief History of the Future, plus our classic trivia question of the week. And we'll remember the great career of Robert McNeil, the co-anchor and the developer of the McNeil-Lehrer Report, then later the McNeil-Lehrer News Hour. He passed away earlier today here in New York at the age of 93. That's all coming up in our next half hour and change. And we definitely want to get your phone calls if you've been a fan of the News Hour for many, many years, or the report before that. We'd like to hear your thoughts as well. So use that phone or that chat room, and we will get you on the air in some manner. What do you think, James, of this landscape of television right now, where we're seeing, you know, it's not just linear broadcast and cable networks and multicast channels anymore. It is mega content services from Netflix and Prime Video and Apple TV Plus and Peacock and and Disney Plus and so forth. And we also have this incredible growing avalanche of new channels like Earth Day 365, Dr. Phil's Merritt Street Media, and so forth, that are running on smart sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles, some of which by the likes of Vizio and LG and Samsung are anywhere from several hundred channels to FreeCast that has over 800. What do you make of the landscape? Is it easier, do you think, for creators you represent to get a place in television?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I think that my first thought on television is that every time one of my daughter has her friends over and I explain to them that television is actually free, their heads explode. But so I think it's what's really interesting is that we've been sort of trained to think that you need to pay for literally everything, and I think that there's a little bit of subscription overload out there in the market, and that's still why I think that the integration of the brand and the content piece is eventually going to be a huge part of this landscape. You know, it's one of those things where Bruce Springsteen said, you know, 30 years ago, 57 channels and nothing on. Now it's like 5,700 channels and nothing on. It's hard to navigate. There's some really great programming out there, but it's just a lot. And I do think, though, that what it does provide is you can organize an audience for just about everything. And that's the most remarkable thing about what we're in. If you're into carburetors, or you're into, you know, minor league hockey or whatever, there's enough programming that can be built around you in a channel. But the problem that's plaguing all the industry, and this is why, you know, from a Wall Street standpoint, is the same thing that was at the heart of why I started Tongo, which is the economics of content creation, they don't work for this distribution model, right? With the economics, the Hollywood model works for scarcity, for a scarce number of distribution opportunities. We're clearly in the era of abundance here, and that doesn't have the same economic structure, same revenue, same audience as the systems are all built for. And you know, I think it's going to be uncomfortable for a little while, but I think eventually it's going to break, and I think that there's going to be huge opportunities for the types of creators that we represent to monetize themselves and monetize their talent and their audiences, going in a lot of ways more direct to consumer, right? You just ultimately the streaming platforms and studios and networks will, if they don't start to embrace this, they'll wind up acting more like just a bank and an internet service provider if they can't break out of that. So I think it's going to be a really interesting 10 years here in television. You'll see amazing new artists arrive, and I think you'll see either consolidation or some removal from the marketplace of some of the streaming services. But, I don't know. I don't get paid the big bucks, but we'll see what happens.
James, two quick takes before you leave us. First, what do you think about the growing number of YouTube talent that want to launch their own television networks, like Dude Perfect and others, or their own TV programs? And secondly, what role do you see interactivity playing? Because now we are seeing more and more interactive games that you can watch on the television set and play without having to use a PlayStation or a Sony or a console on top of the set, because artificial intelligence in the TV set or device itself allows you to use your voice remote, or a joystick to control the action. So A, YouTube. B, interactivity.
A, YouTube. Dude Perfect, I scratched my head when I saw the size of the deal, and then it just started to make more and more sense to me as I thought about it. It's kind of what I was saying a minute ago. Dude Perfect has an audience. You know, that audience right now is mostly confined to being owned by Google, but they have a direct connection with the audience, right? So the creator of the content is directly interacting with the audience. That's unlike, and look, that's the experience that everyone in this country or world under 20 has had their entire, right? We never had that. I could never, you know, Jerry Seinfeld was never writing a comment back to me when I was watching the show. So there's just this different expectation of involvement that happens to people. And when you think about Dude Perfect, the size of the audience, their plans, you know, you could see there being a amusement park in Texas or wherever it's going to be, where, you know, their fans go to experience something new. And they don't, you know, if you're under 20, you know, some of these brands seem different to you and I than they do to Dude Perfect's audience, who, you know, there are big names in entertainment that they wouldn't think even were related. So when you start to pull back and say, wait a minute, they've got an audience, they can monetize their comedy. Look at Jimmy Donaldson or whatever. There's unlimited opportunity for these people, and if you really break, it's the new path to stardom, I think. I'm pretty bullish on the ability of individuals to launch, you know, entertainment companies on their, you know, on their own first, and then with the right partners down the road. And just your second question around interactivity, it's going to be the norm. I mean, I think that the programming entertainment is going to get more like video games, for better or for worse, you know, over time. And I think that just given the technology that's out there, something like Unreal Engine, when it comes to animation, you know, characters can kind of do things, and I think soon, in real time. So imagine, you know, again, an individualized and all that stuff. So it's not your, whatever the slogan was, whoever's TV anymore.
Tongle and Partners is the name of the company. If you want to know more about it, here's where you go online. Tongle.com. It's T-O-N-G-A-L, Tongle, Tongolandpartners.com. James DeJulio, thank you very much for joining us. Wonderful conversation with you. Keep us posted on the projects for television that your creators are working with, and hope to have them down the road in this program. In the meantime, again, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate you being aboard.
All right, Simon. Well, thanks for having me. Great chat, and we will be listening soon. Take care.
All right, you got it, James. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
Bye-bye.
James DeJulio from Tongolin Partners joining us live from Los Angeles. Coming up next, Andrew Morgan, the writer-director of the new PBS miniseries, A Brief History of the Future, plus our classic trivia questions and remembering Robert McNeil and more. All that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reach over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love cricket, I'm talking not about the animal, but the sport of cricket, check out The Cricket Show this Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio. It has everything you want about cricket and where it is going here in the United States and around the world. The Cricket Show this Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be charged 24/7. On YouTube. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon. Simon Applebaum with you in New York along for the ride. 58 degrees at the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our next guest ahead, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Now joining us live from Los Angeles, the writer and director of the new acclaimed PBS miniseries on Wednesday nights, A Brief History of the Future, Andrew Morgan. Andrew, welcome in.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me.
Andrew, how are people so far responding to your series?
It's been really powerful. It's, you know, it's such a fun process. You work on these things for a long time. This was a real labor of love, and it was an ambitious project and a big project. And so it's just you and a little team working on it for, you know, over a year. And to get to, you know, release it and have people now be seeing it week to week and streaming it online is it's amazing. Honestly, it's been amazing to see the comments and notes and stuff rolling in.
How did it come about? What made you get involved with it?
Ari Wallach, renowned futurist and host of the show, gave me a call one day out of the blue. We had a mutual friend in common, and he just said, I'm interested in making a show about the future and not just about what we want to avoid, but what we're trying to build, you know, like what's a tomorrow, or what are tomorrows that we actually want to live in? And it really stuck with me. I walked around that next week just kind of realizing that we really do make an incredible amount of media about dystopian futures where the world's falling apart, where the world's ending. And we have very, very little in the way of what are we actually aiming for? You know, what if we actually do get it right? Like, what's a vision for tomorrow that's actually going to galvanize the type of creativity and innovation that's needed? And I really jumped at that. You know, I'd done a lot of storytelling around injustices or, you know, problems in the world, and certainly proud of that. But I'd gotten to a place personally where I felt a bit burned out and a bit overwhelmed, you know, just by the enormity of the challenges in front of us, the speed at which those are being communicated to us. And I wasn't inspired to make another film or another project about something else going wrong in the world. So this idea that he presented of looking at the challenges with very clear eyes, but putting a new lens on the camera of hope and possibility, and going out and spending time with folks who were using their lives to, you know, invent new ways to be human and to, you know, move this story forward, just really, really grabbed me and you know, turned into something that's really been incredibly life-changing for me.
Mm-hmm. Ari was on Firing Line last Friday night on many PBS stations. I caught the interview he did, and a number of times he related to a word called protopia as opposed to dystopia. How does he define that, and how did you try to, in these episodes, visualize that thought?
Yeah, I mean, we're all familiar with dystopia. So dystopia is, you know, the world is ending, the world's falling apart, everything's turned out horribly. And, you know, we're also familiar with the phrase utopia, which sounds good, but is actually throughout history equally disastrous, because what is utopia to one person or one group can be dystopia to another. And So this idea of protopia just means a future that's better than the one that we experience today. I think, you know, a lot of times there's this kind of, there's this reaction we can have when we're confronted with the reality of the world that we've been born into. And it's almost like we can either, you know, cross our arms and say all is lost, like it's all going downhill. So I'm going to just kind of cover my ears, close my eyes, look away, bury my head in the sand. But there's this other option of actually, you know, taking seriously the unfinished work in the world, understanding the place that we sit in history, as in those who have come before us that have built so much of what we can now build on, and to realize that we have a role to play. And that role, you know, isn't about saving the world. It's not about, you know, making things perfect. It's not about, it's about moving forward. It's about taking a step towards a world that's more focused and more able to deliver on the needs of more people than the one that we found today. So that's, I don't know, that word is kind of a beautiful invitation. And that's what we tried to make the show based on, not this sense of guilt and fear and shame, but this sense of, it's an extraordinary thing to be alive as a human being. And we're here for a brief moment, and we get to use our life to be a part of leaving it better than what we found.
Each episode of this series deals with a particular concept. For example, the first episode dealt, we sort of set the stage, looked at individual ideas and how they can transform and empower people's sense of the future. The one that was on this last Wednesday dealt with chaos and complexity, sort of how you get out of being overwhelmed about what's to come and all the issues of the future that it brings. How did you and Ari and the rest of your production team, how did you go about picking out which subjects you cover, and then how do you visualize them? How do you make them entertaining and engaging for the viewer?
Yeah, well, it's such a fun process. I mean, and I love your question, because one of the things that we decided early on was we decided we weren't going to make a show that was linear in the sense of, you know, there's not an episode about food and an episode about housing and an episode about climate. Like, we wanted to make these really beautiful collages, because I think a lot of the clarity comes in the connection between these different ideas. So to your point, like, the series is really built on a very specific trajectory where these ideas are kind of like signposts that guide the journey that Ari's on, you know, all over the world. And they kind of, you know, weave together a lot of different people and perspectives and projects into, you know, into ideas that we can really kind of grab hold of. And that was such a fun process. I mean, it was a challenging process. I mean, the scope of this show is just massive, honestly. And it was a really, really artful endeavor that our whole team was a part of to really try to, you know, we talk about like cooking with spinach, you know, you go shoot and you have, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, and you just kind of distill it and distill it and distill it into ever more simple concepts. And I think that's something Ari's really gifted at too. I think he's really gifted at communicating to people on a human level, not like a hyper intellect level or an uber scientific level, but just a human level. And that, you know, that and his voice and his journey really informed a lot of the arc of what the season is.
A Brief History of the Future is on PBS, your local PBS station. Many are running it Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after NOVA, which currently is in its 50th year on the air. And you should know that the program is made possible by the Ronald P. Walter Foundation and by this other public television station and from viewers, as they say, like you. Andrew Morgan is the writer and director of the series. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour, right here exclusively on Tomorrow We Televise. The program all about TV's current and, yes, future. Simon Avon with you live from New York, 61 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Let's hear you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We will have episodes for you next Monday and Friday. Coming your way on Monday, our lead guest will be from the new Netflix series, Our Living World, one of their very rare efforts in the world of nature and natural history docuseries. Ben Ray, the series producer, he will be our lead guest on Monday. And on Friday, from American Rust, second season known as Broken Justice, starring Jeff Daniels, the more attorney, executive producer of that Prime Video series, Nick Nantel. That's Ben Ray from Our Living World on Netflix, Nick Nantel from American Rust, Broken Justice on Prime Video. They're both with us next week, Monday and Friday, respectively, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, exclusively here on Tomorrow We Televise. For you, what, by the way, the producer of the show is Zach Morgan. Is he related to you?
He is, yeah. He's my brother, and he's my producing partner, has been for years. He's extraordinary. Produced the whole show in just a huge, huge, huge way.
So what kind of relationship do you have in making the series? Does he suggest ideas? Does he give you critique on how you're producing episodes? Or does he just leave you alone and say, okay, I'm the producer, you're the writer director, I'll let you do what you do?
It's this really constant collaboration. I mean, when I first had that conversation with Ari, and you know, Ari was really clear about the show he wanted to make, wasn't sure exactly how to make it. You know, Zach and I were the first to sit down. We spent a weekend together, and I just remember kind of laying out what really became a lot of the show on whiteboards. And yeah, he's a creative producer, so he's definitely like the other half of my brain on everything, you know, that we make. He helps run our production company, Untold. So he definitely, you know, logistically manages a show. You know, we shot on 5 continents, 15 countries. Like, it's, the scope of this was big. So from a practical standpoint, he's running the operation, but also, you know, he's constantly, you know, on set all the way through post. He's a huge, huge part of the creative process with me.
The next episode coming up this Wednesday is called Once Upon a Time, and it deals with storytelling and how you can be as imaginative as possible to advance storytelling. What's the goal of the episode, and what was it like to put that together?
Yeah, this was a really special one. You know, I clearly, have spent my life pretty obsessed with the idea of storytelling. I feel like I'm a constant student of storytelling, and, you know, it's kind of this effort to say, in the work of building better futures, in the unfinished work before us, a huge part of that is how we are telling the story, how we're telling the story of where we are in this moment, how we're understanding the stories that came before us that brought us to this moment, the stories that need to be held onto, the stories and assumptions and old ideas that need to be thrown out in some cases. And also, you know, the story that we tell ourselves about the future, because there really is a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, when we walk around constantly telling ourselves a story of gloom and doom on the horizon, that really seeps into, and I think in a lot of cases kind of limits and wears down our imagination. So it's a beautiful episode. You know, we go all the way as far back as some of the earliest cave paintings in Spain, what we were filming in, all the way, you know, up till now with some of the, you know, greatest advances in modern filmmaking. And it's an effort to sort of zoom out and, you know, understand our role in the human story as so much bigger and richer and deeper than just this last 5 minutes of a news cycle.
Does the episode get into how television treats the future in scripted form, whether it is shows like The Twilight Zone or Star Trek, which in the case of Star Trek tried to show the future in a positive, engaging, empowering, sensitive light, as opposed to programs like The Walking Dead or The Last of Us or Fallout, which premiered to Prime Video, which deals with dystopia in the future and how to deal with it.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Star Trek, because that is really one of the last great examples of, a fictional world that imagined a future that was better, you know, not a future where everything had fallen apart. And I think there's a, you know, you can do a, like, cultural deep dive on, like, the effects of that one program. But I think it's incredible. It's incredible what that does to people's mindset and their imagination. We also look at the idea of, you know, who's getting to tell the story. You know, ideas not just around representation, but authorship. You know, like, a lot of the stories throughout human history have been written or made or produced by a very select group of people, which has had an incredibly limiting factor on the kinds of stories that we're exposed to. It's really exciting. It's a creative one. You know, I think it's an episode that really is kind of like, it really is using and looking at how we can use the tools of creativity, not just science, not just technology, not just invention, but actual like creativity to reframe how we think about tomorrow.
The episode after that is called Humans on April 24th, and it deals with the ability of ourselves to have more compassion, have more empathy, have more sensitivity for each other. And at the same time, it also sheds a spotlight on what is probably the most controversial technology subject of our time right now, artificial intelligence. What are the points that get made in that episode?
Yeah, it's really kind of examining this, you know, huge question that I think a lot of us are grappling with right now, which is what does it mean to be a human being in this modern world? Because I think the definition of human is being challenged, it's being changed. You know, we look at everything from synthetic biology to artificial intelligence to human augmentation. It's such an interesting moment. Like we're at this place in our evolutionary biology where our tools, we have created tools and technologies that have outpaced our evolutionary understanding and ability to use those tools sometimes. So, you know, the result is, you know, huge levels of anxiety and depression, mental illness. Like we have all sorts of stuff that we're struggling with because at its core, you know, it's everything from the Industrial Revolution to the internet. Like we have been extending and extending and extending the capacity of what a human being can produce, what a human being can consume. And that has real costs associated with it. So it's really kind of looking at how do we understand who we are on a biological, psychological level, and how can we navigate this moment where there is all of these forks in the road around what the role of the human is going to be looking forward. And it's not just theoretical. It's very, very practical because, you know, as Amy Webb says, a futurist that we feature in the episode, like these are the sorts of things that are being funded and studied and developed. So really taking a moment in this time to ask and to understand some of these questions is a big deal. And I love it. I love it because, you know, a lot of times I think when people hear a show about the future, they think flying cars and robots and technology. And so much of our effort in this series was to really constantly make this very human, you know, at the end of the day, like very human. It's not just about our tools. It's about what are we going to use those tools for? And asking those questions when it comes to us human beings is maybe, you know, never been more important than right now.
Coming up, we'll converse with Andrew Morgan about how he sees the future of television and the future of his production company, Untold, and what's next for that situation. Andrew Morgan is the writer-director of A Brief History of the Future. That's new PBS miniseries running Wednesday nights in most areas on your local PBS station, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after Nova. Remember, in some markets, the show runs at that hour, in others later on at night or other days, and in some cases, depending on your local PBS station schedule, there's a replay over the weekend. Andrew joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Great to have you with us on a Friday afternoon before a wonderful weekend wherever you are across the country, around the globe. Simon Ambaum with you from New York, 61 degrees near the top of the hour. In our remaining moments, give a call, 646-652-2906 to speak with Andrew or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up, we will have our classic trivia question. Final time, we're offering the question with a whole bunch of great prizes. And we'll also remember Robert McNeil. But first, we're going to take a call. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, great to hear you. Our super, super fan, Andrew, by the way, calling from that wonderful Liberty Bell city. Go right ahead, Rick.
Hey, Andrew. So far I've seen about 2.5 episodes of the show, and I'm really digging it. And I also wanted to point out or maybe even ask, in the second episode, like 1 minute in, there's a really cool montage. I mean, it was like so cool, almost like a music video. I actually rewound it and watched it about 5 more times. So, like, kind of a shout out to your editor or whoever chose the music for that or whatever. That was just really cool. And one kind of weird question that's bothering me is I wanted to find out what the heck in the middle of that montage, there's like a girl doing like with a cowboy hat or something that comes in all pink. Like it's just like a shock almost. So I'm wondering what on earth is that?
Yeah, great to hear from you, and thank you so much for the compliment. I really appreciate it. We worked so hard on that montage. Joe Volpe, our brilliant editor on episode 2, Chris York, our music supervisor. Yeah, it's really that was a real a labor of love. Yeah, those are some wild clips. I mean, we're trying to kind of give the feeling for people who haven't seen it. We're trying to kind of elicit the feeling of that kind of overwhelmed, media-saturated place you can feel like, you know, in the world right now, where you're just like the weirdest clips from the internet and the strangest sound bites and nothing has context and everything feels a little jarring and confusing and made for shock. So I think that clip that you're talking about is the one I'm thinking of. I think it's a TikTok video, actually. But we just kind of scavenged the internet for the most like wild and random and absurd, and we just kept playing with it. So of all the things, it's really cool to hear you mention that in particular.
Yeah, like I was like that could be a great TikTok video, just that montage. It was like exactly like you said, it's so jarring and creepy but funky. So I wanted to keep hearing the song, and it just like kind of took you somewhere, and it was kind of confusing and unsettling. And I was like, it was so unsettling, I wanted to watch it again and maybe kind of resolve it in my mind. And it didn't. So then I watched it again. It was really cool. So like kudos to that. And also just wanted to say that I've actually sent links to a couple different people recommending the different episodes, like especially the one with making leather and bacon from mushrooms and all. I know some people that are mushroom farmers in Pennsylvania, so I sent that to them. So, you know, continued success. And, you know, I'm going to keep watching until the end. So thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, man. That means so much to me. I appreciate you watching.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Simon. Have a great weekend.
You're very welcome, Rick. Thank you. Take care. Enjoy the weekend. Rick Webber, super fan from Philadelphia, here on Tomorrow We Tell Live. That sounds like a very yummy recipe. What is that, using mushrooms to make bacon?
Yeah, there's a guy named Evan Bayer at a company called Ecovative up in New York, not just north outside the city. But, yeah, using mushrooms to do all kinds of stuff. They're using it for packaging. They're using it for, you know, in the show you can see they're making shoes out of it. There's all these incredible uses for fungi, and they're doing – just incredible things with it. And one of the things is they're making mushroom bacon that Ari gets to eat in one of the episodes, which is really quite delicious. I had it myself. It's almost confusing to your brain when you eat it.
You're whetting the appetite right now. You might want to, like, if you can, we got to talk about this offline. I'd like to try that mushroom bacon. Boy, that's something. So, in terms of the future, where do you see TV's future, given the fact that we're now at a point where we have more and more channels getting on the air through smart TV sets and smart devices? Those devices have artificial intelligence built in. They're now allowing a whole interactive future to emerge. What's your and Ari's thinking about where television goes from here?
I mean, I think I was really learning a lot listening to your previous guest. I think it is just on such a spectrum. You know, I think we forget sometimes that this medium is just in its infancy, you know, and it's really, I think we're just beginning to figure out what we can do with it. I can just say as someone who works on making these things, it's gotten increasingly gratifying in the sense that, to his comment, you can just have a much more direct relationship. Like we're getting all these notes and, you know, in common threads and emails and contact form, all these places, like we're interacting with a lot of people right now who are watching the show. And, you know, some of them have incredibly thoughtful questions. Some of them have ideas. Some of them even have critiques that, you know, really mean something to me and really kind of inform, you know, some of what we're going to be making next. So that to me, like, I can only speak as, like, on the creator side. I don't do a lot, like, on the business side, but it feels like we're going to continue to expand who and where and how we watch stuff, but at the core of it, I think we're just at the beginning, you know, of really figuring out where this whole thing can go.
And where is Untold going? What's next for your company?
We're doing a few things. It's always so annoying. There's a couple things we're working on that I'm not supposed to talk about yet. But we're, you know, we have this beautiful team, like a little family of folks that we've been working together more than a decade now. And we love this type of storytelling. You know, I want to make stuff that inspires hope-filled action. I want people to be inspired to make the most of their life and this moment that they get to be here for. So for us, it's just a lot of joy to make this stuff. You know, it really is, like, it's extra cool when it comes out and it's meaningful to other people, but it's an incredibly rich experience. And yeah, we're gonna keep going. I mean, I feel like we've been doing it more than a decade, and we're really, and I say this in a very realistic way, like it really feels like we've just gotten started. Like, I feel like we're just kind of finding our footing in a lot of ways. So I'm excited to keep growing, keep creating with these people.
You can catch the next episode of A Brief History of the Future, Once Upon a Time, featuring Ari Wallach, next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on PBS stations across the country. And if you can't catch it on the local PBS station, you can also catch it on the PBS app, which is available on Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, Samsung Smart TV sets, Google Chromecast, Vizio sets, as well as TV sets with the Android TV operating system. And remember, check your local PBS station for when it is running, because some stations run it later on Wednesday or on another night, and in some cases they'll also have a replay on the weekend. For more details about the series online, go to pbs.org. That is pbs.org. A Brief History of the Future, coming your way Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, right after NOVA, now in its 50th anniversary year on PBS, on your local PBS station. Andrew Morgan, the writer-director, thank you again for joining us. Pleasure to have you aboard. Congratulations on the success of the show so far, and hopefully much, much more to come for you and your company Untold, with your brother Zach, by the way. So thanks again, and hopefully a great, great run coming up.
Thank you so much, Simon. I appreciate it, man. Have a great weekend.
You too. All the greatest. Take care.
Bye now.
Andrew Morgan, writer-director of A Brief History of the Future, joining us live from Los Angeles. Coming up next, classic trivia question and our remembering of Robert McNeil. First words from BlendJet. If your blender is bulky and a pain to operate, I got an idea for you. Give BlendJet the great opportunity to make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go and make it an easy pleasure. You know, BlendJet is so portable to work with and work up a smoothie at the office or your favorite protein booster at the local gym or a poolside margarita. Not only that, BlendJet is quiet to operate and rechargeable on the go. So what are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com, that's BlendJet.com, and grab yours today. And when you do, use the promo code TELEVISE to get 12% off your order. And get this, when you do, you also get free two-day shipping. So once again, go to BlendJet.com, grab yours today, use the promo code TELEVISE, T-E-L-E-V-I-S-E-D, and get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping. Blend anytime, anywhere with BlendJet. Coming up at the top of the hour, our classic trivia question, final time we're offering it after nearly 2 weeks of play, and we'll remember Rob McNeil. And I'll share with you what happened when I was involved in a very special interview that Robin and Jim Lehrer did during my time as an intern on the program. That's coming your way after we pause near the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 1 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Welcome again to Tomorrow Be Televised, the promo about TV's current and future, special expanded edition because of the passing of Rob McNeil earlier today. And welcome to those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon, I'm with you live from Nueva York, 61 degrees at the top of the hour. Cloudy skies, have been having rain on and off, particularly in the last couple of hours. For those of you who have been checking the Masters, Tiger should be finishing up his round in the next hour. Right now, it looks like Tiger is going to make the cut. As of 2:30 this afternoon, he was still at one over par with five holes to play. Originally, it looked like the projected cut line was going to be two over par. Now it looks like it's going to be at least four over par. So unless something happens, in terms of the players ahead of him or him as he's finishing up his round, Tiger Woods looks like he is going to make the cut and be around for what should be a very interesting weekend of one of the not only one of the great golf tournaments around anywhere in the world, but one of the most distinguished sports events anywhere in the world. The coverage continues into this evening on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Special highlights, by the way, in the second round, around 11:30 after your late local news on your local CBS station, and then CBS and Paramount Plus will have the coverage for you on Saturday and Sunday. And we will still want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment about what you heard, for those who've been joining us since the top of the last hour, and if you want to give us your thoughts about Robin McNeil and his wonderful career as one of the best journalists around, first for NBC and then, of course, for PBS, first with the Watergate hearings where I met Jim Lehrer in the early 70s, and then the McNeil-Lehrer Report and the McNeil News Hour, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere. You're catching us from the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. And use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So do it, and we will hear from you ASAP. Before we get to Robin, let's get to our classic trivia question of the week. It's our final day. We're offering the question. And if you are first to email the correct answer to it, you win a whole bunch of prizes, like the 2024 American Express Pocket Calendar, free Uber card from AMC Networks, free Redbox Movie Night from Crackle Connect, two wonderful musical CDs, Chicago's Greatest Hits with songs like Song for You, Another Rainy Day in New York City, which it certainly was, 25 and 6 to 4 and more, and the Lifetime Women in Rock Collection with great songs and performances by the likes of Cyndi Lauper, Joan Jett, The Bangles, Michelle Shock, Laura Branigan, and Bananarama and more. Plus, two terrific books about the world of television, Running the Show, TV from the Inside by Jeff Melvoin, the former writer showrunner on Northern Exposure, who was with us last fall. And also another book from a guest who was with us last fall, USC professor David Craig and his book Apocalypse Television, How Did the Actor, the famed ABC made-for-TV movie about a nuclear attack, help end the Cold War? All that can be yours if you know the answer to this question. What was Quinn Martin's first television series under his banner, QM Productions? It was not The Untouchables. That was under Desilu. And it's not The Fugitive, one of his more famous shows, which was on ABC. His first series was on ABC. It ran in 1961 and 1962. And that's what we want to know. What was Quinn Martin's first television series under QM Productions? Quinn Martin, of course, went on to become one of the great big performing entrepreneurs of the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. And if you can name the star of that first series from Quinn Martin under that QM banner, you will get an additional bonus book prize. The Deerfield Massacre by the author of the acclaimed Apple TV Plus miniseries and executive producer of the series, Manhunt, James Swanson. So the Deerfield Massacre is a new best-selling book from the Manhunt author. That will also be yours if you can name the series star in your answer. So all you got to do to get in the game, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with a great answer, you win. If you're a previous winner or a guest in this program, you are not eligible. Only email entries. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and X or Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Let's get a winner today or this weekend at the very latest. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. Again, if you just came in and if you haven't heard the news, earlier today, Rob McNeil, the co-developer and anchor person of the McNeil-Lehrer Report and the News Hour on PBS, passed away. He was 93. He expired from natural cause at New York Presbyterian Hospital. The McNeil-Lehrer Report, where McNeil was based in New York and co-anchor Jim Lehrer was in Washington, D.C., started in 1975. It became the News Hour in 1983. McNeil left the program in 1995, and he remained a partner in McNeil-Lehrer production from then on. Robin, as we like to call him, was a very special journalist. He was someone who believed in dealing with facts and doing incisive interviews with anyone, whether it was a world leader, a political leader in the United States, or just an average person. And the beautiful thing when you watched Robin at work, especially on the McNeil-Lehr Report and then NewsHour, was that he had this wonderful ability to communicate an important story in a way that was substantial, in a way that was engaging to viewers, and didn't dumb down. He and Jim Lehrer respected viewers. McNeil and Lehrer met first in the early 1970s when WETA, the public television station in Washington, created a division called MPACT, the National Public Affairs Center for Television, and put together the groundbreaking coverage of the Watergate hearings in Congress. It was a match made in heaven, and now they are in heaven because Jim passed away a few years ago. When the news broke this morning, or early this afternoon, about Robin's passing, Judy Woodruff, who until recently was PBS NewsHour's anchor person, had this to say by Twitter, or X, and I quote, "It was the honor of my life to work with and learn from them, to learn from Robin and Jim. It also was one of the great honors of my life to do the same as an intern on the McNeil-Lehr Report in 1978, the winter and spring of that year, while being a senior at American University in Washington, D.C. I had the opportunity to sit in on editorial meetings with Robin by speakerphone from New York, with Jim Lehrer and Charlene Hunter Gault, Al Vecchione, the executive producer, and all the reporter producers that were gathered in D.C. at PBS's headquarters at La Fond Plaza in the nation's capital. And it was a great honor to learn from Robin, even though I couldn't see him and I didn't have a chance to meet him in person. The thing was that Robin always displayed that wonderful curiosity about how people were doing. How were you getting that story? How were you moving to get the research? What did you need? What aspect of the story haven't you covered yet that you should cover? Here's some ideas. Robin was an especially giving journalist. And whether you were an intern or whether you were a producer or a reporter on the program, you learned a lot from Robin every time you had a meeting with him, either in person or by the speakerphone. I want to share something with you about my most favorite moment being an intern on that program. It was a weekday where then Secretary of State Cyrus Vance was going to do a joint interview with Robin and Jim from WETA studios in Washington, D.C. that would be taped at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and then presented that night on PBS stations coast to coast. I didn't get the chance to attend the event in person. However, I was invited to watch the wires. At that time, the type machines of United Press and National Associated Press at PBS headquarters and see, hey, what's going on? Is there anything that could impact that interview? And as it turned out, there was a breaking story. That day, that morning, the U.S. government approved the sale of F-15 jets to other countries in the Middle East beyond Israel. So I was watching the wires to see, hey, what kind of reaction was there, positive or negative? As it turned out, that morning, there was a hearing in Congress dealt with the sale. And there was one official, one congressperson, who expressed their extreme anger and disappointment that the sale happened and didn't mince words about it in that hearing. So when the story came out, I marked where the comment was, marked the quote, and then gave it to one of the producers. And I was asked, stay where you are, keep watching the wires. Who knows, we could get more reaction. So I did. And I kept going, watched the wires, and hoping, hey, that the interview would work out well. Well, before I usually went home to AU, Dan Werner, one of the producers at that time, came into the wire room and said to me, Jim, use your quote. What? Jim used your quote on the program. And I'm like going, well, I better get back to AU and make sure I'm in time in my dorm room where the TV set is and tune on the show. And I certainly did. 7 o'clock, by the way, in New Washington, D.C., while New York would get another station at 7:30. And sure enough, there's the McNeil-Lehrer theme going on, and there's Robin and Jim together with Secretary of State Vance. And Robin opens the program. Good evening. Today, we have Secretary of State Cyrus Vance here. Today, the United States approved the sale of F-15 jets. He basically gave the whole 10 yards about it and then welcomed Secretary Vance on the program. And he asked him, you know, why this deal? And Secretary Vance made his comment, we did this deal because X, Y, Z, and so forth. And asked another question, just getting to the heart of the matter. And that was one of Robin's great gifts, getting to the heart of the matter, so incisive of his interviews. He turned things over to Jim, and Jim said, well, Mr. Secretary, has there been any negative reaction you've heard about this deal? Are there people out there who don't like the deal? And he said, no, haven't heard much. And then Jim reads about, he says, well, there was a hearing in Congress this morning, and this congressman said, and he read the quote. He read the quote verbatim, and he just looked up. And Cyrus Vance's face turned within 2 seconds red as a tomato. And he was not happy. And he said, that's not true. That's not going to be. It's not a negative deal. It's not going to impact Israel and all that. You could tell he was flustered. You could tell he did not expect that quote to hit him. And it really hit him in the face, literally and figuratively. And Jim, by the way, didn't say, your reaction. He just read the quote on the piece of paper and looked up and let Cyrus Vance respond. It was an incredible moment. And when I saw that moment, it really empowered me to be the best journalist I could be, because it told me the value of research, the value of always looking for the development, the substance, the speaking, what someone said that could be the tipping point of a story, of a circumstance, of a development, no matter what the situation or the circumstance or the story was. And that's important that we as journalists always try to examine all sides of a story and do our research, do our diligence to bring that across to you, the viewer. I took home a valuable lesson from Robin and Jim that day, from that interview. And I'm always reminded of it doing this program, of the value of research, of the value of getting to learn about the people that you hear on this program and the topics that we cover on this program and how they impact and could transform how you watch television, how you use television, your attitude toward shows or people or the medium itself. And I will always thank Robin, and I will always thank Jim and everybody that I had the chance to be in contact with on the McNeil Air Report that semester at American University for shaping my desire to be the best journalist possible and to cover television, if I got the chance, in an outstanding way, as Robin did for so many years at PBS, and before that at NBC News, where he was one of the best correspondents around. I'm sure that Jim and Robin and Al are now reunited in heaven, and I have no doubt they're already planning what they want to do in covering the situation up there. And maybe it's karma, maybe it's circumstance, maybe it's fate, I don't know. But I'm happy to say that in one way, shape, or form, Robin pioneered at PBS a program that every weeknight examined one story, one issue, one subject in all sorts of ways and brought people on various sides of that situation together, one after the other after the other, and then all together to find common ground. I'm happy to say that that format, which made such a difference in television, and I still think the McNeil Air Report and the NewsHour as originally conceived, was one of the greatest formats in the history of television journalism. I'm delighted to say on April 22nd, that format that Robin and Jim beautifully pioneered and presented to us, the American public, for so many years is coming back. It's coming back on Scripps News, formerly Newsy, available in some markets on cable, in some markets through smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. On April 22nd, at the Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, a new series will premiere on that service called Scripps Newsline. It will be anchored by Lauren Magarino, and every weeknight, it will explore a single topic. In-depth coverage of that topic with original reporting, interviews, research, and the facts. And I am thrilled that in an era of journalism, which lately has, I think, taken some turns for the worst, in part because we don't have programs like this, that Scripps News is taking up the mantle that Robin and Jim pioneered for so many years. Again, the program is Scripps Newsline. It's on weeknights at 9 p.m., anchored by Lauren Magarino, on Monday night, April 22nd. That's 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, check your local listings for where Scripps News is at. In some markets, it will be on cable. In some markets, multicast channels. In some markets, through smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. And I'm sure that up above, that Robin and Jim and Al and everybody up there who made a difference with all of us with McNeil Air Report and NewsHour have a grin on their face because they know that, once again, the kind of journalism that they did for so many years will be back in favor, for sure. Again, I want to thank our wonderful guests for being with us today and all of you for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday, and joining us on Monday will be the series producer of the new Netflix program, Our Living World, Ben Roy, that premieres later this month. And on Friday, we will have Nick Nantel. He is the executive producer of Prime Video's American Rust, Broken Justice, co-starring Jeff Daniels and Maura Tierney, and many, many more. And we also hope to have possibly a special episode early Wednesday evening with a very special guest. We'll tell you about that if we have that on Monday's episode. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/television. Make sure you check out our website over the weekend, tomorrowbetelevised.com, available from the great people at On Podium. And remember, 24/7, we're come to you on podcasts on 46 great sites like the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, the Zencaster Creator Network, Amazon Music, Audible, Acast, Odyssey, formerly CBS Radio, iTunes, and many, many more. Before we go, I also want to do two things. I want to congratulate the wonderful people at MediaVillage.org for a fantastic event last night with their Advancing Diversity Unit, a whole group of wonderful people in TV and media and advertising were honored in the Hall of Honors induction ceremony. It took place across the street from City Hall. That's where the Marc Chagall exhibition is at. If you haven't seen it, by the way, go see it. It's an amazing, immersive exhibit that is just stupendous to watch. So congratulations to Jack Myers, to all the inductees in the Advanced Diversity Hall of Honors, everybody in Media Village for putting on a spectacular event. And I also want to congratulate the people at another place I work for, Sports Grid Network, doing a weekly commentary on Sports Newswire. Yesterday, at the Synopsis Sports Media Awards, Sports Grid Network won in the category of best use of a free ad-supported channel. They had a lot of competition from the likes of Galazzo, CBS Sports All Soccer Channel. They have on smart sets and devices, Tennis Channel from Sinclair, and DraftKings Channel on Samsung smart TV sets and their smart, TV Plus multi-channel bundle. So great competition, and I'm thrilled for Sports Grid. So everybody at Sports Grid Network, on camera and off camera, congratulations. You deserve that honor, and I'm thrilled that Synopsis gave it to you on Thursday as part of their Sports Media Award. As always, we love hearing from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. I want to hear what you have to say about today's program, about our guests, your thoughts about the current and future of television, and yes, your thoughts about the great career and the great contribution that Robin McNeil gave to all of us in his journalism. And also, you can find me on social media, LinkedIn and Facebook at Simon Applebaum, extra Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook or LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, extra Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. We love hearing from you. We appreciate what you have to say, and I respond to what you have to say either way within 24 hours. That's our promise to you, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and other carriers of this program. Andy Cho is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is content executive. Websites are led by On Podium. Guitars Vegas is our web coordinator. Today's program was brought to you by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, and mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. Go to BlendJet.com, grab yours today. Be sure to use the promo code TELEVISED. Get 12% off your order and free two-day shipping no matter where you are. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. We are back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, with Our Living World series producer Ben Roy from Netflix. At 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our web and podcast destinations. Wherever you are and whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe, make it great. Remember, let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with you. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned. And good night, Robin.